Welcome to the Sons of Technology Clubhouse. Ditch your fear at the door, take a risk, and enjoy the ride. With your hosts, Joe Marquez and Kyle Anderson.
Welcome, everybody, to another fantastic episode of the podcast by the Sons of Technology. We are so just completely honored that you are joining us today. You know, in the clubhouse, we love to bring in educators who are part of the Sons of Technology group to talk about things that we're passionate about, talk about things that resonate with us, talk about things that are that need to change or happen in the classroom to meet the needs of our students. And this week, when we were chatting in our Sons of Technology group, we were thinking, what should we bring to the table this week? And it was almost unanimous, you know, social emotional learning, right? Right now, where students are coming in where they were taken away almost from being social with each other, right? Because they're in this digital environment. They're coming back with different emotions and different home lives. And this isn't a pandemic issue. This happens all the time. If our students are not ready to learn, how can we begin to even teach them? So we need to do checks to see if our students are ready to learn, because our students are coming from all different walks of life. And so that's what today's topic is going to be about. So let's do a roundtable introduction. I'll go ahead and start. My name is Joe Marquez. I'm Director of Academic Innovation for Q, and lifelong learner and educator out of the Central Valley of California. And as always, my partner in innovation, Kyle Anderson. Kyle, please introduce yourself.
Hey, everybody. Kyle Anderson from Las Vegas, where I am a special education teacher. You can find me on Twitter at AndersonEdTech. Same thing with Instagram, my blog, AndersonEdTech.net. And then also I'm the author of To the Edge, Successes and Failures Through Risk-Taking. You can find that on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And we've got a couple of guests with us that are returning, one of which hasn't been here in quite a while, and it's really great to have him back. And that is Jesus Huerta.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Jesus Huerta. I'm a sixth grade teacher. And thank you, Dr. Ed, for that clap in the background.
It was a silent one, just for the podcast, so you know.
I'm a sixth grade teacher in Calexico, California. It's a multiple subject classroom, but I use all the technology I can get my hands on, 3D printing, robotics, VR, AR, you name it. Big believer in equity, especially access for students to all these awesome little toys, but in our hands, they're not toys, they're tools. And you can find me on Twitter at JesusH1979.
Excellent. And Dr. Ed, please introduce yourself.
Okay. Hey, I'm Dr. Ed. I am the school council chair for one of the largest schools in Alberta, here in Canada. A lot of people don't know this about me. I actually serve as a chaplain with the Calgary Police, and I've been serving for about 5 years, actually. So when you mentioned that social emotional learning was going to be one of the topics, I thought, oh, this would be really interesting to be a part of. So I do appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, and we're super excited that you are both here, right? Because this topic really truly does need multiple points of view. Because, I mean, we have Kyle teaching out of the Las Vegas area, Jesus teaching out of the Calexico area, right? Right there, Southern California. I'm out of the Central Valley. And then Dr. Ed is out of Canada. So you have a huge differentiated population in all of these areas. But the one thing that is not differentiated is the lack of differentiation, right? Because all of our students, no matter where they're coming from, they come from different socioeconomic backgrounds, different ethnic backgrounds, different home lives. Some of our students, when they go home, that's when the real work begins. They have to take care of their little ones. They have to cook dinner. They have to do their chores. Others have all the time in the world to do their work, right? And so we have to truly understand our students before we can ask them to understand our content. And I know that's difficult sometimes, right? Because especially if you have, you know, 40-minute class periods or 50-minute class periods, and you really just need to get to the content, you know, sometimes we push past the just asking of how was your day or how are you feeling or are you ready to learn, right? If the students are not in the mindset to learn, then everything you say is just going to be white noise. All the hard work you put into creating your lesson is going to be for naught because your students aren't ready for that lesson, right? And this is not just a morning thing. We have students that go through the day and drama happens at break or at lunch. They get a text from their best friend that's now their frenemy. There's social media thing. They didn't get the number of likes that they wanted on a post and now they're upset. There's so much that happens in the lives of students that we have to check at the beginning of every class. Hey, how is everybody doing? And we have to be mindful of that. And yes, social emotional learning goes far beyond that as well. You know, are students represented on campus? Are there adults that represent our learners? Is the content that we are teaching representative of the cultures and students we are teaching? That's part of social emotional learning as well. Are we giving student access to devices to use effectively and efficiently? Right? Because, you know, sometimes we take for granted, like, oh, you know, kids play with computers or they do this at home, you know, but a lot of times they actually don't. There's a lot of times that the only device that a student can use at home is one singular cell phone that maybe a parent has for work and they have to take turns using the cell phone to do work, right? We can't assume. So we have to take initiative. We have to take the advance notice of we're going to use technology because sometimes that's the only place they're going to get to use it. Or that's the only place they're going to learn how to use it effectively for creating and to get out that artist in them. And so this is why I love the group of educators that are here right now, because Jesus, you bring out the best in your students through 3D printing. Right? Dr. Ed, you bring out the best in your students, understanding their emotional state and understanding where they're coming from and getting the best out of them. Kyle, you are a special education teacher. So you know that there are students that need extra help and extra attention, right? And so this is why I love this group. So I just want to throw it out there. You know, what are some of your favorite activities or what are some of the favorite things that you do to identify or to answer the question, are my students ready to learn?
If you don't mind, I mean, I can go with what I've been doing lately. For me, the number one thing is they got to feel comfortable in their space. And virtually, that can be difficult, especially, you know, we have limited time. So what I've been doing lately is I'll show them videos from Mark Rober. He used to work for NASA. He's an engineer. He's the one that does the glitter bombs every Christmas time. So people try to take the packages off. He has like booby trapped ones, but you know, he doesn't say bad words. He doesn't do anything inappropriate. But what I do is I show them that because it reinforces the design process and the engineering process. So he goes through it and everything. And he's just awesome. And the kids love it. And they always ask for more. So it just depends. I mean, sometimes I start the morning with that. It could be a video with corgis, you know, pups, just so they start laughing because they come in and they're kind of down or they're like, I'm tired. You know, it's 8:15. I don't actually have to get dressed and go to school. So I kind of do things. But when they want something more, I feel like, OK, I got to do something extra special. I try to throw something on that definitely, you know, has a little educational spin on it. And then the other thing I've been doing is I've been ending each session, the last 5 minutes, 7 minutes, we've been playing Pictionary on GymKit. They have a draw that mode. Dr. Ed is laughing. He's seen it. It's awesome. It's so good. I'm like, okay. Every time, when are we going to play that? Halfway through the session, are we going to play it right? I'm like, no, we still got to do all this other stuff. But sometimes I'll have low numbers, like in a Kahoot, like maybe 10. I'm like, okay, some are not feeling it. Their internet air quote is not working. But then I'll put that on and I have more kids. And actually what I don't do is tell them, oh, so how come I have 20 now and not earlier? Okay, I'll let it slide. Maybe by doing that and not, you know, breathing down their neck, maybe next time they'll go, you know what? He's going to let us play GymKit later. You know what? I'll jump in and participate. I'll give this, you know, Kahoot a try. And, you know, for me, it's a check for understanding. For them, it's to have fun and learn at the same time. So that's what I've been doing lately. Just something to kind of mix it up.
I love it. And Dr. Ed, you're doing a lot of great stuff as well. Could you kind of give us an insight into how you would kind of tap into the minds of students to see if they're ready to learn or to get them in the mood to learn?
You bet. Thanks, Joe. I would say really when we were growing up, our parents would go and hang out at the playground with us. And one of the reasons was that's where all the other kids were, right? So they wanted to watch us play. It wasn't that they were super into playgrounds. They were much more interested in us and who we are hanging out with. And so if things have changed in this space such that kids are much more into the digital playgrounds of video games these days, we are not going to play these video games because we really care about video games per se, but we really care about our kids and we care about what their interests are. And you know, I mean, there's the classic saying of people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so my approach, especially when it comes to creativity, has been always to start with the basis of interest, because interest makes it relevant immediately. And if you do not have the interest, the question is always going to be why do I have to learn this? What's the point of all this stuff? But if it's related to their interest, there's no question. You move on to the next step of how do I move further with this? And I do feel that that's really what they're trying to do. They're not just trying to play games or watch things. They're trying to go to the next level. They're trying to figure out what do I need to learn in order to become better at these things? And the more that they learn these types of skills, which ultimately lead towards creativity, the more that it's going to be helpful for their own motivation, for their drive. And really, these are one of the few things that people honestly bring back from the classroom to the living room and back. It's those interests. Those things don't change. The technology changes. Everything else is different. But their interests, their values, what they care about, it's the same.
No, that's fantastic. That's amazing, because you're absolutely right. And I love the analogy that you said about taking your kids to the playground. It's not like you see a 40-year-old man going down the slide. Well, occasionally you do, but you don't do that for that. You do it because the kids enjoy it and you want to see the joy exuding from them. So why not bring that kind of same mentality into the classroom? I love that kind of statement, because we can all relate to that. I know Kyle can relate to that. He's got younger kids as well. So Kyle, what would you do to kind of create a place where students want to learn?
So we've been doing this, my one co-teacher and I, right from the beginning of the school year, and we just now went back into a hybrid model, and we're continuing what we've been doing in the distance model for this whole time. But it started out like first week of school, just telling the dumb dad jokes. And I have an app on my phone of dad jokes. There's like, I think there's 1,100 different jokes, and I mean, they're just ridiculous, some of these jokes. But my co-teacher and I, it started out, I think I was just telling one at the beginning of class just to kind of lighten the mood. Well, then she started telling one as well, and then it turned into a joke battle, to where now, like, we come in with our joke, and we talk a bunch of mess to one another ahead of time about whose joke's going to be better that day and whatnot, and then we tell our joke. And we put a poll in Google Meet and have the kids vote who won the joke battle for the day. So, and it's actually blossomed into a couple of our students will actually come prepared with a joke now as well. In fact, we have one student that the father actually emailed us and thanked us for allowing his child to participate with us, because his child has Asperger's and social interaction with others is very tough for this particular student. And his father was saying that, you know, I've never seen them participate like this or interact with people before. And I think it has a lot to do with you allowing them to participate in your joke battle. So that this student is making strides socially as well as academically as a result of that. So, but then over the course of the past couple of months, we started to incorporate a non-math related warm-up with it as well. So we do our joke battle and then we do a warm-up of sorts as well. And to kind of encourage the students to participate in it, we'll give out extra credit if they unmute their mic and participate in the warm-up or type something in the chat. And you get like the first person to get it in there, that's who we give the point to. So it gets really competitive. But it really, between the jokes and then those warm-ups, it really fires the kids up and gets them ready to get going for the day. And again, it has nothing to do with math, although sometimes it is fun to do a math-related joke. We do find those every now and then. But it gets the kids fired up, and now they're engaged, and then you can ease them into the subject matter for the day. So, and I mean, this co-teacher and I, it's for algebra. So you're talking high school freshmen who are kind of tough to engage sometimes. And then it's math, which is a subject that a lot of students have a hard time engaging with. So, and I feel that we're doing a really good job of getting the kids going. And while a lot of teachers are struggling with not just engagement, but also students completing work and passing classes, my co-teacher and I, we're not having that issue as much. I think because we've gone out of our way to make it more about having a little bit of fun and not just the subject matter as well. And I'm not one to judge other teachers or know really what's going on in their classes, but I can almost guarantee that a lot of the teachers that are having those struggles are probably just diving straight into material and not looking out for the emotional well-being of the kids and trying to have a little bit of fun with it first.
No, I think that's absolutely key, Kyle, is the fun aspect of it. I have this thing that I call Mr. Miyagi-ing my students, right? Where you do something fun with them, but you're using techniques that you know you're going to be using later in class. For example, as a science teacher, I really focused on a CER model of labs, claim, evidence, reasoning. We're going to be doing this activity, make your claim, collect your evidence, and then tell me your reasoning, whether you were right or wrong with your claim. And you have to be collecting that stuff. And so what I would do at the beginning of class is I just ask a question that kind of resonated with the students, where they would have to kind of look, you know, internally or on the internet to find an answer, to come up with a claim and bring evidence to be able to argue almost about that topic. So we would have, questions like, what's better, TikTok or Snapchat? And the kids would have to go and make their claim. I think TikTok's better. Well, why? Here's the reasons why. Here's my reasonings why. And another student would step up. Ah, I take that. I think Snapchat's better because they're learning to talk. They're learning to emotionally become invested in the conversation. They become a community in the class because now they're passionate about what's being talked about. And they're learning to speak out publicly, which they may not do if we're talking about something we're doing just in science. And so every single day, I would post a non-science question where we would spend the first 15 minutes talking about it. And it really created a sense of community that everybody's voice matters and everybody's claim matters as long as you bring evidence along the way to prove your point. And so when we got to labs, I said, remember everything we do. Remember how we had to say whether you like TikTok or Snapchat. That's the evidence we're looking for in this lab. You have to find the evidence and you have to be proud of your evidence to make your, when you made your claim and have your reasoning. The reasoning is the conclusion. And the kids are like, okay, got it. But we did that because we created community at the beginning with things the students cared about. TikTok and Snapchat had nothing to do with my science class. Twitter did. We always talked on Twitter in the class. Hashtag Marquez Science. Look it up. Look at that history that was there. But it gave them a chance to express based upon epistemological knowledge and based upon collected evidence to make their reasoning, to make their case. And the kids kind of busted out of their shell. Right. And to create a sense of community, to create a sense that everybody's voice matters, to create a sense that your opinion matters and your voice should be heard, that was super important to me because there's nothing worse in the class than you ask somebody, hey, what'd you think about this lab? What was your conclusion? They don't say anything. It's like, do you remember that you say things all the time here? That must mean you haven't collected enough evidence. You're not as proud of your reasoning as you were at the beginning of class. Let's find more evidence so that you'll be proud of your reason. Let's do that. And that's really what created this community in my classroom. And it really brought out the students who were kind of quiet because they learned to speak up before I asked them to speak up, right? And I think that's an incredibly important thing. How do you create that confidence in your classroom? Because confidence is a part of SEL. If students are not confident in themselves, if students don't think their voice matters, if students don't think that you know, if students think if they say something, they're going to get made fun of or something like that, you can really bring down the entirety of your class. What are some things that you do in your classroom or ideas that you have that can really empower students to showcase their knowledge through their voice and be proud of that voice?
I guess for me, I'm lucky because the sixth graders I have now were my fifth graders last year. So I was able to lay down the groundwork for respect. For example, this didn't happen this year, but this happened in a previous year. They were doing a presentation about themselves. This was probably right around December. And, you know, I'm going to have to say kind of a bad word. Yeah, I'm going to say a bad word, but it's just to kind of show, you know, and it's still what I do now. So there was a slide for like favorite foods and drinks, you know, what do you like to snack on? And I had a student that was an EL. She said it out loud. She goes, "Oh, I love drinking Mexican Coke," but she spelled it C-O-C-K. And so I had a couple of students that, you know, they were kind of like troublemakers and they were laughing. And I'm like, why is that funny? What did she say that was funny? No, well, there's something else. I go, well, then tell me about it. What is it? And they just put their heads down. And I go, I'm not trying to embarrass you. I go, but you're trying to embarrass her. And that's not what we do in this classroom, I told them. I go, I didn't try to embarrass you, but you're laughing, disrupting her presentation. You know, so why don't you explain what happened? And they apologized. And after that, one of them, I saw a big change in. He became more respectful. The other one, I tried my best and I couldn't. And the same thing. There was a presentation, I think it was like 2 weeks ago. And one of the students had a hard time with some of the words because they were very technical. They were doing a science presentation. Nobody said, what were you trying to say? And I mean, they know what they're doing when they do that sometimes. And they were like, you know what? I want, and I'm like, okay, feedback. What's positive? What's a negative? You know, one of the negatives was like, oh, you know, they didn't have enough pictures and enough visuals. But somebody gave a real good positive. And they go, you know what? I like that she tried her best with those words. I don't think I could say those words even half as well as her. And the student kind of looked up like, whoa, because she kind of had her head down like, wow, this is really hard for me. Because she has a difficult time speaking. But she's also secretly my best presenter. It's funny because she has that confidence. But this is one of those things that brought her down. And I told them, look, we're a little community. We're a little family here. We could either get along or tear each other apart. I go, but why would we want to do that? And so I think that helps them. They know they can go in and it's a safe space. Even virtually, they know it's a safe space that they can speak and present and share their ideas. And they're given feedback and criticism, but in a positive way. Because for a good thing, you know, this is their second year. But in that first year, I would see or hear comments that I was like, is there a better way to say that? And I think that helps those students that wanted to goof off and kind of maybe, you know, put these kids on blast to make themselves feel better. I would ask them, you know, do you think you could have said it a better way? I asked them like that. And I had a student one time ask me, why didn't you get mad? And I'm like, why? Well, they're like, I was trying to embarrass that person. And I said, did you want me to embarrass you? They're like, no, but you were worried I was, right? And they said, yeah. I go, so now you know how that student felt when you said what you said. I think to me that's more powerful than slamming them or let me talk to you right after class and, you know, just finger in their face. Hey, let me kind of put you in their shoes. Now you understand how they felt. So that's something I try to do a lot.
And that's a great life lesson too, right? Because, you know, it's kind of, you know, when I was younger, my grandpa would tell me when we were working with wood, woodworking, he would say, you always measure twice, cut once, right? And so I always tell students, always think twice before you say something, right? Think about what you're going to say and think about if somebody said that to you, right? Before you say anything, put yourself in those people's shoes. I say the same thing about posting online too. Before you hit submit, before you hit send, think, how is that going to be? Is that going to be misconstrued in a different way, right? Always think twice before you post, always think twice before you say something. And I think our students need to hear that. And I don't think enough teachers emphasize that enough like you do. So I love that you did that. Kyle, what about you? I know that you're in a very unique spot because you get to co-teach all the time. And so you're working with another educator. What do you do with that educator to kind of create this safe space, this community where students feel that they can speak without being kind of ridiculed or teased?
So it's funny you say that because we just returned to hybrid this week and we already had an opportunity to where we could really give some attention to some students in person that we weren't able to for the last few months. But I'm going to backtrack a little bit first. And because I co-teach, in the Google Meet sessions, you've got some students that are perfectly fine with turning on their camera, unmuting, asking a question or whatnot. But the majority, it's in the chat. And for one teacher to really be trying to monitor the chat and any questions coming in and teaching at the same time, that's a lot for a teacher, for one teacher. So we've been very fortunate that there's two of us to where I can monitor the chat and address questions. And then we also use GoGuardian, not necessarily to make sure a kid's doing what they're supposed to be doing per se, which, I mean, if a student's not doing anything at all, we can go in there and send a quick message, say, hey, why don't you join us in class? And that's really what it is. It's more of a just a nudge versus a you need to get to work kind of deal or something like that. But the kids know that in that GoGuardian chat, they can send us a direct message in GoGuardian if they have a question that they may be embarrassed to ask in the chat on Google Meet, or if it's something more of a personal nature. So, and we can communicate with kids back and forth in that fashion on GoGuardian using that private chat. So, but now that we've returned to in person, one of the first things that my co-teacher and I decided we needed to do was just check in with kids just to see how they're doing. So what we decided to do is after our joke battle, after our warm-up, after we did a little bit of teaching and got students working on some activities, I pulled every one of them out one by one outside. So we teach out of a portable, so you know, it literally was outside. So I was able to call each student out, bring them outside, and question number one was, how you doing and are you excited to be back to in person? And it was an overwhelming yes, I'm excited from every student I talked to, which was really great to hear. So then it was just a conversation of how, you know, these last few months have been really tough, and a lot of these kids are ones that have been really struggling with online learning, completing work, consistent attendance, and really just, you know, achieving over these last few months. So it's nice to see those students that are back in person. And then the conversation shifted from the how are you doing, are you happy to be back, and just kind of just chatting back and forth about the last few months, whatever. Then it became like, okay, let's take a look at the grade right now. So now I was able to talk and have a one-on-one conversation with these students in person about where they were at with their grade at the current moment, what they needed to do to get caught up, and really setting some goals for the next class. So, hey, the next time we're in class in a couple of days, what's your goal? What are you going to have done at this point? And, you know, you have students say, like, well, oh, I'm missing that test. I'm going to make sure I have that test done. Or, you know, I got a couple of assignments that are missing. I'm going to make sure I get those done. So there were so many different levels of things that we were able to address just in, I mean, these conversations were 3-4 minutes at most. So, but they're conversations that kids hadn't had with an adult in over a year at this point. And, you know, like you can't see the smiles on the faces because of the mask, but you could see it on their face, in their eyes and whatnot. And just seeing a kid react to, wow, somebody actually, you know, is going to help me out here and actually cares about how I'm doing. And it felt good on my end to be able to have those conversations too, because I needed that even, you know, not interacting with students in over a year in a face-to-face fashion. It was just, I don't want to say I got used to it because you don't get used to that, but I was numb to it. And to have that again, it wasn't like I forgot how to do it, but it took really to kind of back into the water before just diving in with having conversations with actual people again. So I've had one day of that so far, and I'm looking forward to the next few days to be able to do the same thing. And then we go on spring break, so then we're off for a week. But then we got about 6 weeks left after spring break to where trying to make up for lost time at that point. And I'm hoping to have those kinds of conversations with kids on a regular basis, because a lot of kids really just need that right now.
And I love that, because, you know, when you are transitioning from complete distance learning into face-to-face or hybrid, we can't just treat it like it's April, right? Like in a normal year. It's almost like the first day of school towards the end of the year of school. It's a whole different modality of learning that the students hadn't had probably in about a year. And so they need that question. How do you feel about being back? Are you ready to be back? Are you ready to learn? How you doing? A reintroduction to a learning model, because they haven't had it yet. And so I love the fact that you pulled each individual student out one by one to ask that question. They must have felt very special. So I commend you for that, Kyle. Dr. Ed, what about you? How are you, you know, creating, or how would you see creating this community in the classroom where everybody feels that their voice matters? What activities you do to kind of reemphasize that?
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. I wanted to, before I mention how I'm going to help with the different aspects of self-confidence, I wanted to compliment some of the stuff that we've already heard today. So Kyle, I loved how, like, asking each individual student how you're doing. One of the things that we do sometimes in training for the chaplaincy is we ask the question of how are you holding up? Because what's happened in our society is that how are you doing is a function of time. So it's like, please, like the if you think about the time for how are you doing, it's generally asking people to answer quickly. So you'll get something like, I'm fine, I'm okay, everything's good. Whereas if you ask, how are you holding up? It's actually indicating I have more time for you. So if you want to really tell me something, I'm here for you. And so if we think about the kinds of questions that we ask can also change the type of outcome and the type of answers that we're going to get. And Joe, way before this, you talked a little bit about like TikTok or Snapchat. And I think in addition to it being a very interesting science question, I think it also relates very closely to socio-emotional learning and where our society is right now. Because what happens when we have a social media completely, this is not operated by humans, it's operated by an AI that is just looking at the milliseconds that people watch on specific posts. What is going to happen to the posts that you see? Right. And so certain types of posts, and this is, again, this is not conscious input anymore. We are talking about like you scroll through the equivalent of the Statue of Liberty worth of posts every single day. And the computer is just looking at how many milliseconds you spend on each post. So we are back to Freudian times. We are back to, look, more aggressive posts. Guess what? They get a little bit more watch time, especially on Twitter. Right. And but not just Twitter, but like every platform. And they're recording those milliseconds. So just understanding that, yeah, maybe I'm angry all the time, or maybe I see a lot of posts related to this. It, like, why do you see them? Because other people like stop the scroll when that happens. And so just realize that, you know, what you see isn't necessarily what reality is. It is just like what our unconscious is. It's more a reflection of our unconscious, we don't control this consciously, how quickly we scroll. So just recognize that that has a huge impact on what you're going to see on social media. The other part, like now we're back into the your question about confidence and how do we talk about confidence? How do we build that confidence in schools? I treat confidence as three different aspects. And if you address each three, like you can deal with them differently. So one is the self-esteem, which is the I am statement, like I am not this person, or I am this, I'm always like this. I am is a very important statement because it determines whether or not you'll try. So if you say just, I'm not good at school, I'm not good at math, then you won't even try, right? And so the way that you might approach something like this is you're really great at something, something, right? Like, so if you're able to be more specific or able to ask people to fill in the blanks for you're really great at blah, it will really help people with their self-esteem, because that's one part that is definitely can be very lacking if you're just running, especially on your own. The other is self-competence. So this is your skill. So it's the I can statement. And with I can, it's like what is that simple? For a lot of people, they feel like, I can't do it. I can't do it. It's too hard. And so it's all about breaking it down into simple steps. So for a lot of people, it's like, I can't write in the chat. It's too scary. And so what some people will do is to get this culture in their Zoom, they will just say, okay, can you hear me? If you can hear me, type yes. Like something simple that doesn't require them to think a lot, and they can just write it, right? Anything you can do to get that first step is going to be huge in terms of their self-competence. And then the last one is like your self-reliability or reputation. And the statement is kind of the I always, right? I always or we always. I like the idea of we always to say that it's not about like, oh, I always mess this up or I always blah, blah, blah. It's like we always keep trying. We always do this. And so you start building a we culture that you want in the classroom. You start asking like we type questions, then people start going, yeah, that's me. I always do that too. And so the we becomes the I, and it's all three of those things combined gives a person a very strong path towards self-confidence.
No, I love that. You know, building up the students to the capacity to answer questions, right? Because we can't just assume that a student will be confident enough to type in the chat, especially if it's a question that they're like, I don't know if that's the right answer. I don't want people to look at my answer and be like, how do they not know that answer? And so they get wary of doing that. You know, that's why I have been really conscious when I'm doing a workshop, before we start diving into kind of different tools or different lesson designs, I always do what I call the stress test. And I do this with them so that they can understand the stress in answering questions in different modalities. And I use Padlet for this because Padlet allows you to do text, audio, video, image, all these different things. And so what I ask them to do is, hey, I'd like you to introduce yourself to the group with the text. And they would do that. And I would say, what was your stress on that? Like, were you afraid to type? Were you afraid people were going to see it? Were you afraid that people were going to read it? And I said, between 1 to 5, 1 being it was no problem, 5 being I was scared to death. Where were you? And they type a 1. I go, so, okay, next, I want you to now record your voice saying the exact same thing that you wrote, but you're now recording it knowing other people are going to listen to you. And they're like, oh, okay. And so they did it. I go, what's your stress level now? And they were like 2, 3. I go, it's the same exact information, but because you're asking for a different modality, you're now a little bit stressed about it. It may be because you don't think the way you sound is the same, the way that you hear. It may be because you have an accent and you feel people are going to think less of you because you have an accent, right? Adding the voice component stressed you out a little bit, right? I go, now let's take it another step further. Now you're going to record your voice through the video. So not only now are they going to hear your voice, but they're going to see you and your background. And they're like, oh, I wasn't ready for this. Exactly. Have we made our students ready for this? You're going to do it. You're going to read the exact same thing you typed, the exact same thing that you did in vocal, but now it's going to be visual. What's your stress now? Nearly everybody, 4s and 5s. I go, you see? I go, you were not ready for video because we just met and you don't know the people around you. Are you doing that to your students? Are you asking them to record a Flipgrid video just because, right? Have you built the capacity for that? Are you asking them to do a recording in your Seesaw? Have you built the capacity for that? Part of social emotional learning is building the capacity, building the relationship, building them up to that point. And I think sometimes teachers get so excited about a new tool that they bypass that and go straight to a stressful situation, which can cause an issue, right? And so building the capacity of culture and confidence and community is what we need to look at first before we start going down that stress test. And I always do that now because I want teachers to know that you can't just go straight to a stress level 5. Or if you're an Office fan, stress level midnight. You can't just go straight to that. You have to build up to it. And so sometimes we actually put our students in an emotional state because we are excited to use a new tool. And we just have to be aware of that. So I just wanted to bring that up. You know, one of the things that I have found that I was lacking early on in my career was involving the parents. Parents need to be involved in the process so that your students understand and trust you. And not the communication that a lot of parents get. A lot of parents get communication if their students did something wrong, did something bad, got a bad grade, right? I would send parents a note home every time a student did something good in class, even if it was a small good. And so I actually created a little app. It wasn't really an app. It was a Google form. I'd have all my students' names. And so I would select the period and all my students' period names would pop up. And so Claire did a great comment. She had a great comment in class. I clicked Claire's name, made a great comment. It would automatically send an email home. I don't have to type the email. I used Formula. And it would automatically pull from Claire. It'd pull the parent's phone email and the parent's first or last name. And it would say, "Dear Mrs. Hauser, Claire had an amazing comment in class today. I just wanted you to know she's participating phenomenally. Thank you so much for being a great parent and having a great child." I would do that. And I would just constantly in class do that. And parents would come back. No, nobody has ever sent me an email. Nobody's ever sent me saying my son or daughter did something well, right? Thank you so much. And they would tell their student, "Hey, Mr. Marquez sent a great note about you." And they'd come back and go, "What I say matters. What I did in class matters. You're not just saying that. You're actually showcasing." And kids would talk more. Maybe because they knew they'd get ice cream or something if they got a good note from a teacher. But they would say more and they felt confidence and they trusted me. Because I'm not just communicating the bad at home. And I think we need to make sure that we're doing that more often. I had a parent one time say, "Mr. Marquez," this is that parent back to school night, "Mr. Marquez, Allison has been a straight A student since kindergarten. I get zero emails from teachers because she's doing so well. You're the first teacher that emailed me and said, your daughter got an A on an exam. Your daughter's doing great in class. Your daughter is collaborating well. You're the first teacher that ever emailed me because my daughter doesn't do anything, hasn't done anything wrong to get an email. And I just wanted to say thank you because that really helps us understand, you know, where we fit in all of this." And I took that to heart. So I did that every single day. And I would do it every single beginning of the year to create those automatic forms, because it may take me 6 or 7 hours to make them, but the rest of the year, it was well worth that time, right? To build that capacity. That's part of social emotional learning, knowing that it goes not only from the classroom, but also home as well. What are we doing to encourage community beyond our classroom to showcase the kids that we care about them, not just when their butts are in the seat, but when they're out on the field or out in the campus or out at home as well?
I guess for me, it's just reminding them, like, look, what you say out loud carries weight. What you post online carries permanent weight, because somebody might not be around to hear you, but as soon as you hit send, and I think you mentioned it earlier, Joel, the same thing, you know, they do something online, it's permanent. And I've shared with them, you know what, you got to be careful how you do these things. And I've shared like news, you know, clippings where, oh, this student lost their scholarship because of past tweets or Instagram posts. And I told them, it's not just what you know, it's how you know it. And they kind of like, what do you mean? It's like, well, you could be the smartest person in the world. I go, but if you have no respect for anyone, no one's going to open doors for you. They'll just close them on you. You could be the most valuable person, but if you can't get along with people and respect them, I go, you're not going to get anywhere. And that's something that I definitely push. And I tell them, do the same thing out there. Think about what you're doing out there. You know, be kind. Look at how I am in the classroom. If you feel like, you know what, I was respectful, pass it along. Even just the smallest thing. And sometimes like I'll hold the door open. They're like, why do you hold the door open for everybody? Because it's the right thing to do. Oh, but it's like 30 kids. I'm like, and it's okay. I can hold it open. I go, okay, well, then you hold it open next time. So then they start opening the door. So just little things like that. And just kind of just reminding them, like, look, what you throw out there into the world, it comes back to you. It's either going to come back great or it's going to come back negative.
Love it. Dr. Ed, what about yourself?
Yeah, I absolutely love it. Mentioning parents is so important these days. Like, we can't, our kids cannot be good if the parents are not good, because we're spending, kids spend as much time, sometimes more time with the parents nowadays than they do with the teachers. And so, like, parents, we live in this weird, funny world where everything's about, like, naming and shaming parents. So we have terms like screen time, sharenting, overwhelmed, below grade level. Like, all of these things are meant to, they make, like, parents feel really, really guilty, because guilty parents, you know, buy more products, they do more things. And I think that really the important thing here is that sense of community, that sense that you're not the only one struggling. I think the biggest thing is this isolation. I talk to so many parents and it's just isolation. Isolation is such a common thing that they comment about. And so one of the things that we talked about in our online school was, normally if you walk into a school, there's a hallway and you can see the kids' work. And, you know, you can comment and be like, oh, this is really great. So what does the digital hallway look like for a school? And so one of the things that we are starting at the school is a hashtag. It's on whatever social media you choose to use, but it'd be like hashtag Saint Isidore Celebrates. So it's a unique hashtag for our school. Nobody else has got it. And if any parent decides, okay, I'm going to share this, put the hashtag on, everyone else can see it, and they can also be a part of that community. And I think we need to find new ways. We need to find new ways to connect with each other. And if that's one of the ways that we do it, it not only creates a digital, like, way that we can connect with each other, but it could become our digital yearbook at the end of the year, because it's this record of this crazy year that we've all had together. We've all made it through. Isn't this amazing? Like, let's, like, when you write something like the word celebrate inside it, you know that this is about wins. You know, this is about positive thing. And I think, to Jesus's earlier comment, that's the concern. If you have any kind of hashtag, make sure it's one that starts with that level of positivity. Otherwise, you might get anything. You need to be more specific about what you're looking for and what that is associated with that hashtag. But I love the idea of parents, because that's the hardest part. It's, most of them are, they feel way less competent with the technology than even teachers. Like, their teachers are struggling, but they don't use it on a daily basis. They have other things that they have to do. And so they struggle even more. So yeah, we are all here for each other. That's the key thing. We're all here. We're all struggling through the same thing. I remember, like, some parents saying, like, oh, my kid is, like, spending so much time in video games. I feel so, like, I just feel like it's just so out of control. I don't know what to do. And it's this kind of attitude that every moment that a kid spends in front of a screen is necessarily bad, because we've kind of created this term. But that's not true. The reality is there are many different types of screen time, right? I describe them as three different categories, like sedation, relation, and creation. Are you using it just so, you know, like, just so I can watch something, but I'm not actually going to do anything with it? Am I using it to better understand my kid? Am I relating to what they're doing and potentially influencing what they're going to view next? That is a different use of screen time. Am I using this to create something brand new? Am I creating, like, a video or a podcast? Am I creating, like, a new piece of Lego? That's totally different. And so I treat screen time as, we need to move beyond the all screen time is bad. Even the Pediatrics Association will tell you that, oh, you're having a Skype with grandma and grandpa? That's good. So there is clearly more to screen time than just, like, it's a bad thing.
You're absolutely right. I love Celation, Relation, Creation. I think there's a book in your future with that title. So make sure you start writing it before somebody steals it.
I'm working on it. I'm working on
but
it.
But I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Now, Kyle, what about yourself?
My old tried and true that has been pretty much my entire career, and I continued even in distance learning, and now that we're getting back into more face-to-face, is spark conversations about stuff that's not related to school. So for me, it's kids wearing a band t-shirt. Ask them about that band, or ask them, you know, about their taste in music. And, you know, you may find something in common with a kid with that. kids carrying a skateboard, ask them if they're any good on the thing, like what kind of tricks they can do on their skateboard. If they're on a sports team at the school, talk to them about what position they play or something along those lines. So, and then, you know, I mean, those are all things that I'm totally interested in, but talk to them about the stuff that maybe you might not be interested in as well. So, like, if I see a student wearing an Ariana Grande t-shirt, I don't listen to Ariana Grande, but I'll ask about it. So just by sparking those conversations like that. Or then just noticing things. I mean, this comes from Brent Coley. He talked about this extensively in his book, Edu Influence, about, you know, sparking conversations about noticing things. So, like, noticing when a kid gets a haircut or a new pair of shoes or something along those lines. Man, those things will go a really long way in regards to the social well-being of a student. And you really get to know your students and, you know, one another a lot more by doing things like that. So that's just something that... I've been doing it for a long time, just because I like to talk. I mean, and I bet you would never guess that with 59 episodes of this podcast, and then approaching 100 with my other podcast. I really come out of my shell by doing these things. No, I love to talk. So, and that's just the way I get to talk more, is by sparking those kinds of conversations.
Yep. And Dr. Ed, I know you have another thing you'd like to quickly add.
Yeah. So one of the things that I really wanted to comment on was one of the reasons why there are so many challenges around SEL these days is because there is a big generational shift. So we grew up in a world perhaps without the technology that exists today. And so we know that when we look at technology, we see it as like, this is not normal. Something is weird. Something is wrong. Whereas our kids, when they grew up, they've never known anything else. And so we have this massive, massive shift between the world that we live in today and the world that we grew up in. And unless we start connecting, that shift, it's purposely dividing the two generations. Our generation that grew up without the technology and the generation that knows nothing but the technology. And so unless we start making active effort in order to do these types of relation, we will always have a hard time connecting with kids. We will always have all these problems of isolation. We will always be completely unaware of what is actually happening with our children these days. Like, many of the things that happen online are completely, like, parents are completely unaware. Teachers are completely unaware. It's because we think of this as like, this is a bad thing. Right. But it is their world. It is the environment that they live in. If we are not involved with that world, we are going to leave a lot of kids behind and we are going to be struggling a lot. And so I think it's, they want to connect, but now they're even finding it hard to even talk to us because they don't even know that we don't even know what they're talking about. Like, they talk about these things in the game or they talk about these things in social media. We don't even get those. And so there, because of this gap, there is like a language gap. There's a bunch of barriers. And we need to get through those things if we are to be serious about addressing social emotional learning.
No, I agree, right? And I think some teachers see the word SEL and they're like, I don't know what that means, right? I don't know how to start. I don't know where to start. I don't know what to do. I don't know this. It just means connecting, right? A great teacher is not a perfect teacher. A great teacher is one who can develop relationships and be relevant to their students. That relevance is knowing what the students like, how they learn, how they are emotionally feeling, and becoming that relevant teacher for them that can pull out the best in them, that can create the spark, because you never know. You may be that spark that ignites the joy of learning in a student for the very first time. And that smile, that elation on their face for the very first time, you get to be audience to that. And that's what makes teaching amazing, because you've just opened up a new avenue for those students. And we have to know that is part of our job. And we can't even touch the surface of SEL in an hour-long episode. So I know we're going to probably have to do a part two in this. But everything we've talked about, you can find little bits and pieces throughout the Sons of Technology episodes. Go back and listen to our pop culture episode on how to engage students with pop culture. Go back and look at all the different episodes and all the things that we talk about, because it just means being relevant and having love and compassion and building that confidence and love and compassion within your school community, within your classroom community, and at home. That's all we are looking for. And as Dr. Ed has said, You know, students may not know the pleasure of pedaling your bike down to Blockbuster Video or the pain of renting a video cassette and they forgot to rewind it. But you know what? Our students have the pleasure to have devices to create, to engage, and to explore things we never had when we were in school. And if we are not leveraging that power of the device, we are missing out on an amazing opportunity. So I ask you, how are you connecting with your students? How are you being relevant with your students? Because if you're not, then you're not truly being the teacher that they need right now. So look, are your students ready to learn? If not, how are you priming them to be ready? Because that's your job. And that's a primer example of why SEL is incredibly important right now. So dive in with your feet first, because you know what? It may be chilly right off the bat, but you'll get used to it and you're going to swim like a champ. So thank you so much for joining us today on this amazing episode. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to us. Make sure you go to our website, sonsoftechnology.com, to see all the amazing videos that we have available for you to watch, but also make sure that you go into your classroom tomorrow ready and willing to learn, to be that teacher your students need. So again, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And thank you for becoming an educator, because it's the most important profession in the history of the world. Thank you. We love you. And as always, ditch.